As always, we really love coming here, and it's always a real blessing to us, and we hope we are a blessing to you. This morning, I'm going to be sharing out of 2 Kings 6:11, and I want to talk a little bit about perspectives. So we're going to, I just want to read this real quick, and then we'll go back and kind of look over it. So 2 Kings 6, verse 11 says, "Therefore the heart of the king of Syria was greatly troubled by this thing. And he called his servants and said to them, 'Will you not show me which of us is for the king of Israel?' And one of his servants said, 'None, my lord, O king, but Elisha the prophet, who is in Israel, tells the king of Israel the words that you speak in your bedroom.' So he said, 'Go and see where he is, that I may send and get him.' And it was told him, saying, 'Surely he is in Dotham.' Therefore he sent horses and chariots and a great army there, and they came by night and surrounded the city. And when the servant of the man of God arose early and went out, there was an army surrounding the city with horses and chariots. And his servant said to him, 'Alas, my master, what shall we do?'" Have you found out that "alas" is never used positively in the Bible yet, right? It's never "alas, the cookies are done." No, it's always bad. "So he answered, 'Do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them.' And Elisha prayed and said, 'Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see.' Then the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he said, 'And behold, the mountains were full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha.'" So what's been happening in this chapter, what's going on in the verses prior to this, is Israel is at war with Syria. And what Syrians did, Syrians had a really interesting way of doing battle. They didn't get a large army together and go fight the other enemy big army, and whoever won, won. No, what they would do is they would get a small army together, go to the border, pick out a spot, rush across the border, raid, pillage, do all the things, and then scoop back across their own border and disperse. So by the time the defending army got there, there was nobody to fight. And they would just slowly expand their borders, taking one city at a time, and they were very effective at this. They won a lot of battles. They took a lot of areas this way. But what's been going on in this chapter is it says not once, not twice, but multiple times, the king of Syria says, "Okay, we're going to go and hit this city." And they get the little army together, they go to the border, and the Israelite army is standing there looking at them, just waiting on the other side of the border. "Hi, guys." Right? They're already there. They're waiting for them. So now they have to disband. They have to pick another spot. They have to reset. This happens enough that the king of Syria is going, "Okay, who is telling these people where we're going to be?" And his servants go, it's not us. It's definitely not us. It's Elisha. He tells the king of Israel what you say in your bedroom. Ooh, that's kind of scary, huh? So the king of Syria says, "Send an army and get him." Which, mistake number one, right? If you have any critical thinking skills, he's sending an army to capture the guy who's telling everyone where his armies are going to be. Yeah, that'll work, sure. The next morning, they get up, and they're completely surrounded. The army snuck in at night, surrounded them, and they're ready to go. And I love this interaction between Elisha and his servant. Absolutely love it. Because the servant says, "Alas, my master," right? And in the Bible, "alas" usually means imminent death. Not good. This is, we are going to die. What are we going to do? And Elisha could have looked at him and said, "Oh, have more faith. We'll be fine. Have more faith." And left the poor kid blind, right? He could have said, "Have a better attitude." He could have said, "Man, you need to dig deep, look with it." No, but what he says is, "Lord, open his eyes." This is such an incredible teaching moment from Elisha. Because what Elisha is saying here is, "Lord, open his eyes to the reality, the real picture. I want him to see this how it actually really is. I want him to see every spectrum, the full picture. Because the servant was seeing a reality. There's an enemy army. There's a problem, right? Elisha was seeing the reality. Two different things. And the servant's eyes are opened and he looks and what does he see? Chariots of fire all around them. Were they ever in danger? No. Was God in control the entire time? Absolutely, right? And I'll tell you something I've been realizing more and more is that every day I have to get up and go to God. And so, God, open my eyes. Open my eyes because I need to see your reality. I don't want to see things the way I see them, the way my earthly eyes see them. I don't want to see things the way my heart sees them. I want to see them the way you see them. In every single way, whether it's circumstances, current events, right? Other people. There are a lot of people I meet, I want to give a high five in the forehead pretty quick, right? I'm just being honest, right? That's how I feel. But if I see them the way Christ sees them, that's a different picture, isn't it? Suddenly it puts a different perspective on me when I'm seeing them through the eyes of Christ. The way I see myself, even that, I mean, that's pretty basic, right? Who do I see when I look in the mirror every day? I got to see myself the way Christ sees me. Because there's three perspectives on each of us that we all have to learn to deal with in life. It's what other people think of me, what I think of myself, and what God thinks of me. Those are the three big perspectives that human beings have to wrestle with, grapple with, and learn how to handle. And I'll let you in on a little secret here. Only one of them matters. And it's how God sees me. Why? Because that's the only one that's grounded in truth. It's the only one that has a foundation of something solid and something real. What people think of me? Man, that changes every day, doesn't it? Right? Every week, 1 week I'm in, 1 week I'm out. 1 week this person likes me, next week they don't like me. How much effort and how much weight should I put on what people think of me? Very little, right? What I think of myself. Now, we think that's a pretty concrete thing, right? That's what our world tells us. Well, you have to see yourself with value. You have to see yourself this way and that way. But how I see myself can get so twisted, so messed up, so distorted, it bears no resemblance to the truth. No resemblance to reality, right? I can get so puffed up, I think I'm God's gift to the earth. And my mama told me so, right? I can get so broken, so beaten down, so crushed that when I look in the mirror every morning, I don't see any worth or value whatsoever. And both of those extremes are wrong. Both of those extremes are actually sin. Why? Because the only opinion on my life, my worth, my value, who I am, the only one that matters is his. So if I want to know me, I have to know him. If I want to see myself the way I really am, I have to go to the Creator. C.S. Lewis said the only true picture you'll ever get of yourself, the only real image you'll ever see of who you are is in the reflection of Christ's eyes. I have to look at him if I want to know me. Right? The foundations of modern psychology, as was my background is in psychology, and the foundations of it are Socrates. To know thyself is the beginning of all wisdom. That was the statement that started the modern psychological field, right? And I'll tell you what, I've known myself. I stink. What's inside us isn't enough. You can look within, dig deep, try to get all the self-esteem you want. Doesn't mean it's real. Dad always says self-esteem is a bunch of self and a bunch of steam. It all evaporates, right? It all goes away. So if I want to know me, I have to go to him. I have to go to God and say, God, open my eyes to your reality. I need to get your perspective on myself, on other people, on situations. And when you ask God for that, that's when you start getting real wisdom operating in your life. That's when you start getting clued in to real wisdom, real truth. And wisdom's actually a really interesting thing. I was reading in James 3 recently. James 3 talks about wisdom. And what's so interesting is he talks about two very different types of wisdom. He says there's wisdom from above and there's wisdom from below. Now, isn't that interesting? Wisdom from above is pure, peaceable, gentle, and full of mercy. Wisdom from below is earthly, sensual, and demonic. Now, that's wild that there's two types. And what's also wild is they're both called wisdom. He didn't call one wisdom from above and dumbness from below, right? He didn't call it wisdom from above and stupidity from below. Why are they both called wisdom? How is there a way that seems right unto a man, but the end of that way is death? And in the Bible, when the word death is used, it can be referring to a physical death, but a lot of times it's talking about separation. So there's a way that seems right unto a man, but the end of the way is separation from God. Now, how can the way seem right? It's not a way that seems wrong. Right? It's called wisdom, yet it's from below. It almost doesn't make sense, right? But I think James reveals it in such a cool way. He says that wisdom from below is earthly, sensual, and demonic. So let's start with earthly. Earthly wisdom. Now, why is it called wisdom? Because earthly wisdom is wisdom, but God's removed from the equation. That's how you get people who are super smart, super intelligent, very practical, and God is nowhere in the picture. Earthly wisdom doesn't even necessarily start out sinful. It just removes God from the thinking process, right? This servant isn't sinning here. He's not looking at the situation and making a faithless statement. No, he's going off of earthly wisdom. He's going off of the information he has at his disposal. And he's going, okay, wait, let me think about this. If these guys are here to kill Elisha, they're going to kill me too, because I'm Elisha's servant, right? If they're here to capture Elisha, probably still going to kill me, because I'm not important at all. Once the townspeople figure out that this army isn't here for them, they're just here for us, they're going to throw us outside on the city streets, right? Okay, what's the plan, boss? He's not sinning. He's going off practical wisdom, and he can't see the reality. He can't see what's actually going on. And it's so interesting. The servant, all he can see is the earthly army, and he's having one very specific reaction, right? He's freaking out. Elisha, on the other hand, all he can see is the heavenly army. And he's having a totally different reaction, right? He's calm, cool, and collected. Why? Because he has a track record with God. Because he's seeing, not with earthly wisdom, not with his human eyes, he's seeing the whole picture. So he's sitting back and relaxing. I'll guarantee you, I've thought this, when you read this, and the servant says, alas, my master, what are we going to do? It's probably because Elisha came up on the roof, looked at the enemy army, and went, huh, interesting. Beautiful day today, huh? He's totally relaxed. Why? Because he's seeing the reality, right? And this is something I think that's so important to always remember. Wisdom from below always blinds us to wisdom from above. Wisdom from below always hides wisdom from above to us. And that's why you can have people. In college, I had friends who didn't know the Lord, and they were extremely smart, talented people. And I'd talk to them and tell them what I was planning to do and things I was planning, and I was going, man, I think God's leading me this direction. I was all excited. And they'd go, oh, no, that doesn't make any sense. You got to do this, this, and this, and do this thing over here. And then I would go, well, wait, I thought I heard from God, but these guys are really smart. Maybe I need to listen to them. Two different wisdoms, right? Two totally different thinking paradigms. And when you hang out with friends, when you spend time with people that don't know the Lord, it's very easy to be shaken because you go, wow, this person has so much on the ball. But man, we can have so much on the ball and be so wrong, right? If we're not looking with wisdom from above, if we're not operating and walking with the wisdom that comes from God. And today, more than ever before, I have to see God's reality and have His input into my life, because there are so many voices that tell us what truth is, how to live your life, how to have peace. A lot of voices today shout so loud about what truth is, right? And a lot of people today believe the garbage they're selling. That's interesting, right? It's one thing if someone's trying to deceive you, and they know they're trying to deceive you and trick you, and what they are doing is wrong and all that. What if a person believes the junk they're selling? Oh, that's a totally different thing, isn't it? Pontius Pilate said to Jesus, "What is truth?" And when I was younger, I read that, and I went, man, this poor guy had been lied to so much, he didn't know what truth was. But that actually wasn't Pontius Pilate's problem. His problem was he had 10 people a day coming into his court and going, this is the truth, and I believe it, and these are the facts. Then the next person comes in, says the exact opposite thing with equal conviction. Which one do you believe? They both believe what they're saying, and they're saying opposite things. They can't both be right. And what do we deal with in our world today? We hear opposite opinions, and they believe what they're saying. Which one's right? If I don't have a relationship with Jesus, if I don't have His input, His perspective, I'm going to be deceived. Because today we have an entire generation of people who believe the lies they've been told on how to live their lives, how to have happiness, all these things, and they believe them. And they go, man, I don't know why my life isn't working. A friend of ours, as a chemist, and he said something I thought was really interesting. He said, you know what the best smelling chemical I have in my lab is? I said, what's that? He said, it's cyanide. I went, really? He said, yeah, it smells like toasted almonds. It's amazing. Because almonds have trace elements of cyanide in them. That's where they get their smell. Fun fact for the morning, right? And he said, what's really interesting is, he said, I can take that bottle that has skulls and red labels and warnings and do not touch, do not inhale, all this stuff. He said, I can hand it to someone. They'll take a sniff and go, wow, that smells amazing. And then they'll die. He's like, but you know what else is interesting is I can take that bottle and rip all the labels off of it, take the skulls, the red label, all the things off of it, hand it to someone and go, hey, smell this. They'll take it, smell it, go, wow, that smells good. But they'll still die. And our culture today is ripping all the labels off of everything that destroys our lives. They're going, oh, no, this is fine, this is fine. Let's rename that. Let's get rid of the shame and guilt on this, and that's totally acceptable. And people are still dying. They just don't know why. They don't know why. So if I want to live a life that excels, if I want to have a relationship that works, if I want to have a relationship with my kids that works, if I want to walk through life, I have to go to God and say, I need your perspective. Open my eyes. I have to ask Jesus into my heart. I have to be born again. I have to say, God, I invite you to show me your perspective on everything. Otherwise, it just doesn't work. Because human beings were never designed to work without a relationship with God. This has been true from day one. Right? All of this. The serpent tempted Eve, and he said, well, eat of the tree of knowledge. And it says that she looked at the tree, and she saw that it was good for food, it was pleasant to the eyes, and it could make one wise. Now that's interesting, right? It's not the creepy, smoky tree with skulls for fruit in the dark part of the garden. No. It's pleasant to the eyes. It's good to eat. It can make me smart. Let's remove God for a second and go off earthly wisdom. That's the tree you eat from, right? Looks great. Smells good. Yeah. But God had set a standard. If you do this, this will happen to you. And I'll tell you what, God has still set a standard today. And we have to follow him. Noah was called a just and righteous man. And the word that's used there, it means one who conforms to the standard. And that's what we are to be, a people who conform to the standard that God has set, a people who look at situations not with our eyes, but with the eyes of Christ. Because the thing is, if you walk in earthly wisdom, right? So James said, wisdom from below is earthly, sensual, and demonic. If you walk in earthly wisdom, all it is wisdom with God removed. But if you live your life that way, the next step downward is the sensual, right? And the word sensual here doesn't have a sexual connotation. What it's talking about is your feelings. The actual translation of the word is natural. It's your base carnal nature, your absolute normal human desire. And that's so interesting, isn't it? Because when you reject God from your thinking, you're not led by intellect. You're not led by morality. You're not led by God. You're led by what feels good. Boy, I sure am glad we don't have a world that's ruled by what feels good today, right? No, that's how everyone lives. Everyone lives according to what feels good to me. I'm going to reject what I don't like and embrace what I do like because it feels good. My carnal nature is what completely rules me. And it doesn't take very long if you walk in the sensual for it to become demonic. Earthly, sensual, and demonic. Very quickly, you open yourself up to whatever doctrine you want to embrace, whatever influence you want to embrace, and suddenly it's outside of your control. And we have an entire world today that is being ruled by stuff people can't control. They're not the masters of their own lives anymore. It's bigger than them. And the only fix is a relationship with Jesus. He's the only one that can come in and set all of this right. So how important is it as a follower of Jesus that every day I go to him and go, okay, God, open my eyes. I want to see your reality. I don't want to be led by what looks good, makes sense, feels good, common sense even. I want the wisdom that comes from above. And this is absolutely paramount, not just for my life, but for every life I meet. Because if I want to do ministry that really impacts someone, how do I have to see them? The way Christ sees them. I have to see the person's real need, the real problem, the real fix. I have to be able to talk with someone and go, hey, I think your perspective's off because I'm seeing the reality, right? I have friends to this day who still don't have a relationship with the Lord. And what's amazing is you talk to them and their lives are really challenging, really messed up, and they don't even know what the problem is. They actually can't even see to get the picture straight on what to compare themselves to. I'll say, how's it going? It's all right, but if I get my sleep schedule figured out, right, I change my diet and kind of cold plunge some more, then I think I'll do better. They don't even know what the problem is, and they don't even see what the fix is. So I have to have the wisdom that comes from above where God can say to me, hey, talk to this person about this. Pray for this person about this. This person's life is really struggling in this area. That's where they need help. Otherwise, I'm looking at it with my wisdom, and I'm going, well, I think I see the problem. I know what that person needs. So even if I want to impact someone else, I have to have God's perspective. So today, let's just bow our heads for a moment. I want us all to think about different areas of our lives where we need to see with the eyes of Christ. First, ourselves, other people, family members, situations, life decisions. Because the thing is, the wisdom of God is ours for the asking. But I have to go to him, humble myself, and say, God, I need your perspective. I don't want to operate just off my common sense and wisdom. I need more than me. I need the wisdom that comes from above. I need you to open my eyes and show me the reality, not a reality. And so, God, we ask today that you would come and open our eyes, that you would give us insight, that you would show us the real needs of first ourselves and other people, that you would equip us and enable us, because our world desperately